Thank you so much for this church family. Thank you for the sunny day. Thank you for the love that's here, for the fellowship, for your spirit. And we just ask that your spirit would be with us as we open your word together in your name. Amen. Struggle. There's something about us humans that are drawn to struggle. Maybe you're a sports fan, maybe you're not, but there's something about cheering for your team, hoping they'll make it, hoping maybe they'll make the playoffs, perhaps, hoping maybe they'll make it to the championship, that as humans, we are drawn to. And in fact, it's a multi-million dollar business because we like this idea of struggle. One team or one force against another, as we find that as entertainment at times. And even if it's not entertainment, even if it's a little more serious, we still like struggle. I enjoy studying about the histories of World War II, the struggle between good and evil, I believe, and the history of the American Revolution, where people rose up to do something significant for others. And this Memorial Day weekend, as we remember those who have died in the service of our country, I can't help but think and be inspired by these people who either risked their lives or gave their lives because of me, or for me and for you. I remember a few years ago, I had the opportunity to go down to Independence Hall in Philadelphia, where these men came together and they declared high treason against the most powerful king in the world. And they pulled it off. Benjamin Franklin was quoted as saying, "Gentlemen, if we don't all hang together now, we will all hang separately later." And they hung together and they pulled it off. And they stood up for freedoms that we enjoy today. Freedom of the press, freedom of a religion, freedom to the right to bear arms. Many freedoms because of the struggle they went through. It's an amazing story, amazing opportunity, or amazing lessons that we can learn. There's something about struggle, whether it's as superficial as a sports team or as deadly as war, that we humans are drawn to. But struggle is not quite as fun when you're part of it. It's fun to read history and say, you know, wow, good job, Ben. Way to go. But when it becomes personal, it's not quite as fun. You know, when a relationship goes bad, or a loved one dies, or the rent's due today and you don't have the rent today. Or when you've messed up and hurt people and they won't forgive you and you have to live with the consequences. And suddenly struggle is not so fun when it becomes personal, when the stakes are too high. And it's times like these I've found myself asking at times, why God? You know, why do I have to go through this pain? Couldn't we just skip this chapter? Couldn't we just skip this pain and go to the next level? That would be pretty cool. Why does a loving God, a God who loves us, a God who is all-powerful, why doesn't he take the pain away? Often, he doesn't take the pain away. And I would suggest that he could. He could make everything better. And I would suggest that there is a good reason at times that he doesn't. Not all of us like pain, but there's good that comes out of it. It's one of the epic stories of the Bible. We find it in Genesis chapter 25. And if you're new to the Bible, Genesis is the first book of the Bible. We find this epic story starting in verse 25, where two sons are born to Isaac and Rebekah. The first one comes out, and they name him Esau, or Red. He comes out as a hairy child. We assume red hair there, and they name him Esau. And the second one comes out grasping the heel of his brother, and they name him Jacob, or supplanter, or one who takes what is not his. You know, it's a name of action, but it's not real complimentary, the name Jacob, one who takes what is his. And you know, you don't have to live up to the labels people put on you. Often people will put labels on you, oh, she's one of those, or he's one of those, when it makes your story simple, when God has a more complicated story for you. You don't have to live up to the labels people put on you. But Jacob doesn't step away from his name. His mom begins to tell him this prophecy she received, that the older will serve the younger. And he's the younger, and that sounds pretty good to Jacob, that his brother would serve him. And he begins to think about this and realize perhaps maybe God needs some help. Perhaps maybe God has forgot about his promise and he's there to help out. The opportunity comes, and we find here in Genesis chapter 25, starting with verse 29, our story begins. Genesis chapter 25, verses 29 through 34. It says, "Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, 'Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished.'" That is why he's also called Edom. Jacob replied, "First sell me your birthright." "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is the birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. I don't know about you, but I don't really like to be taken advantage of when I'm in a weak position, you know? Sometimes you're in a position you can't do much, and somebody takes advantage of you, and it just doesn't feel good. I remember a few years ago, I was living in Pittsburgh, and I had these candy machines. Don't ask me why I had these candy machines, but you know, they're the ones that stand up, and you put a quarter in, and you turn the quarter, and you get some candy. I was there trying to plant a church, and things weren't working out well, and I just needed the money. And so a guy came off of Craigslist and came and bothered me and said, "Well, I don't have all the money right now, but I could give you this much, and I could drop the rest off later." I said, "Well, you know, I don't know this guy. Will he drop the rest off later? But I need the money. I at least need some money." Maybe you've been there. So I let him have the machines, and he hasn't dropped the money off quite yet. You know, maybe next week. I shouldn't get suspicious, but it doesn't feel good to be there, be taken advantage of when you're in a weak position. Well, the sharp dealing turns into open deception, and we find as the story goes on, there's a lot of story here that we're skipping, but we find in Genesis chapter 27, the story goes on, and his mother encourages him to trick his father into blessing him instead of Esau. And now this isn't just sharp dealing. This is open lies and deception. And again, Jacob is helping God with God's promise to him. It doesn't turn out well. Esau swears to kill Jacob after their dad dies, and he has to flee for his life. And Jacob is fleeing for his life, and along the way, something changes. But I want to tell you, if you're trying to do God's work with the devil's tools, you might be doing it wrong. Jacob's using deception to get the promise that God has given him, sharp dealing, and he finds himself using the devil's tools to do God's work. It doesn't turn out well. He runs for his life, and somewhere as he's running for his life, as he's tried to get the birthright, as he's tried to get his father's property, somewhere as he's running for his life, things change. He reaches this rock bottom spot where nothing has turned out well. And somewhere he comes to God And we pick up the story here in Genesis chapter 28. Again, we're missing a lot of details of the story to try to get the main theme, but in Genesis chapter 28, verses 10 through 15, we find this. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones here, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven. And the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised for you. You know, it doesn't matter how much of a rascal you've been. If you're willing to say, God, I messed up. God, I want you in my life. He still has a plan. He still has a future for you. It doesn't matter if your name is a planter. It doesn't matter if your reputation is to take what is not yours. When you come to God again, he has a new dream and he has a new future for you. We fast forward in the story again as Jacob goes to his uncle Laban, and he falls in love with his cousin. Now, you may be thinking, hey, that's not real cool. These days it's not. Genetics are different, but back then it was okay, too. And he's tricked into marrying her sister. You've probably heard the story. He's tricked in, and he begins to learn what it's like to be deceived. Then, after his uncle Laban, he gets to his uncle Laban's place, Jacob is in a place of weakness, and uncle Laban changes his wages 10 times, and he begins to understand what it's like to be dealt with sharply. Yet, God blesses him through the struggle. The story goes on some more, and Jacob comes to a place where he leaves. God says, go back to your own land. It's time to go back. And Jacob takes off. Laban comes after him. God stops him, says, don't mess with Jacob. And he heads back to his hometown. He heads back to the place of his brother, where Esau is. And again, we pick up the story here in Genesis 32. Genesis 32, verse 1 says, Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, this is the camp of God. So he named the place Mahanaim, which means two camps. On his way to it, it seems like there's two camps of angels. In fact, if we read in book Desire of Ages, it suggests that these camps were in front of him and behind him. And so imagine what it would be like to be Jacob at this time. God has appeared to you as you're going to Laban's in this dream of a ladder coming up and down and says, I'm going to bless you, Jacob. And then when you're in the land with Laban, God comes to you and says, okay, it's time to go back to your land. And then lastly, God opens Jacob's eyes and he sees a band of angels before him and a band of angels behind him. Now that would be pretty cool, pretty confidence building, I think. You know, I've never had a dream directly from God. I've never seen angels. I've had some dreams I thought had some significance, and some turned out they seemed to. But I've never known for sure. Hey, those are angels right in front of me. Those are angels right behind me. God told me to go here. And you would see, it would seem that Jacob was feeling pretty good right now. that's not quite what happens. So Genesis 32, as we continue the story, Genesis 32, 3 through 7. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you are to say to my master Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there until now. I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats, men servants and maidservants. Now I am sending this message to my lord that I may find favor in your eyes." When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, "We went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, the flocks and the herds and the camels as well. For he thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. So suddenly, Jacob, that's okay, we'll just wait a second. All right, we're good. No worries. So suddenly, Jacob, with a lot of faith, angels before him and behind him, having this dream of the ladder, God telling him, suddenly, in fear and distress, Jacob is dividing his family into two parts. He does three things in this time as he becomes fearful, even though God has shown himself to him. He divides his family into two parts, probably not an act of faith, but strategically smart. If one group gets attacked, perhaps the other will survive. Secondly, he begins to pray, "Lord, you promised." That's a good thing. "Lord, you said you would do this. You promised to make me a great nation." And third, he prepares a gift for Esau. And if you read negotiation literature, they tell you if you need to tell somebody bad news, you should tell it all in one shot. You know, have it over with. Here's the thing. This happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. Let them deal with it. Let them go on. If you tell somebody good news, you should spread it out. This happened, and then a little bit, and this happened, because it has a greater impact on the human psyche. And so here Jacob is, he's not a dumb man, and he spreads these gifts out to Esau. Yeah, here's one, and then here's one, and then here's one. And here he is. He's done all he can, all the smarts that he knows how. He's prayed to God. He's divided his family, his group, into two, and yet it's not enough. He's still scared. He's still there waiting. He sends his family across the river. And as we think about this story, as a bystander, I want to say, Jacob, you know, there's angels before you. There's angels behind you. God told you to do this. It's going to be okay. But it's different when you're a spectator. You know, we've all looked into somebody else's life and say, "Hey, brother, it's going to be okay." But it's different when you're in the ring. In fact, Teddy Roosevelt, one of our notable presidents of this country, captured this difference in a quote that's become kind of famous among leadership circles. It says, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory or defeat." It's a different thing to be in the ring. It's easy to say, "Oh, Jacob, you know, where did your faith go? But it's a different thing to be in the ring. And now in the story, God does something strange. God comes down, and we believe this is Jesus. As the story goes on, it's not just an angel. It's something more than that. God comes down and wrestles with Jacob. Now, that seems strange, doesn't it? You know? Wouldn't it have been nicer for God to come down and say, hey, brother, it's going to be okay. Put your arm around it. It's going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Wouldn't it have been nicer than to come down and wrestle with him? But God's already done that. You know? He sent the angels, and he sent the dream, and he talked directly, and it wasn't enough. And so God comes down and does this strange thing. He wrestles with Jacob. They wrestle, and Jacob thinks it's an enemy, and he thinks he's fighting for his life. I don't know if you've ever been to a place where you think you're going to die. I have a couple times. I remember one time up in Alaska, I was flying back from, I was pastoring Wrangell and Petersburg churches, and flying back from Petersburg and got started late and just wanted to be home. Wrangell was 30 minutes away by flight, and it was dark, and took off with my family and going along the coast, and then all of a sudden the coast disappears and you realize, oh, I just flew into a cloud. That, you know, that realization that you've lost a visual impact, which wouldn't be that big of a deal, except I was about at 800 feet and there was mountains over here on the island, Mitkoff Island, that Petersburg's about 1,500 feet. And then over here, there's islands, mountains at about 1,200 feet. And if you start to do the math of being at 800 feet, and you know, it starts to come together that you don't want to lose visuals. And it was about 10 or 15 seconds as I tried to turn the plane around, and then we flew out the other side of the cloud, and I could see the lights of Wrangell and continued on. But I landed, and I was shaking, and I was worn out. Maybe you've been there. Maybe you've thought that maybe you're going to die at some point. But it takes it out of you. And here we find Jacob fighting for his life all night, thinking it's an enemy as he's really fighting with God. But then he's touched on the hip and he begins to realize what has happened. Genesis 32, 24 through 32 finishes our story here. Genesis 32, 24 through 32. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel," which means he who wrestles with God, "because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Verse 29, Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Or some translation says, "It's too wonderful for you," which is probably more accurate. Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched there. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. The broken man limps away, healed and ready to face what's ahead. Physically, he's exhausted, but mentally and spiritually, he's ready. And it's in that struggle where God comes down and wrestles with him, where he becomes ready. Why did Jesus come down from heaven and instead of saying, "Hey, everything will be all right, wrestle with Jacob"? Because he loved him and knew that's what it would take. I don't know what you're facing today. You know, maybe you're involved in struggles that none of us know about. Sometimes we don't share our deepest struggles with people. And you cry out, why God? And it seems like God is very far away. And I'm not saying God causes all pain. He doesn't. We live in a sin-sick world and sin causes pain. Sometimes God uses pain to bring good out of it. And he could have taken away the pain from Jacob. In fact, in this instance, he causes it, which is a little bit strange from God. He could have taken away the struggle, but it was through the struggle that Jacob is healed and is ready to go again. Jacob, the supplanter, becomes Israel, he who wrestles with God. And throughout the ages, God's people would be known by this name, those who wrestle with God. Years later, Jacob's son Joseph finds himself unfairly imprisoned in Egypt. And he can say, you know, this is okay because I'm an Israelite. I'm one who wrestles with God. And then in the same courts, many years later, Moses would say, I would rather be one who wrestles with God than enjoy the pleasures of Egypt for a season. And he wrestles with God and brings 1 million people out of slavery. Joseph becomes the prime minister of Egypt. God anoints David king. Then Saul tries to kill him for many years. He hides in caves. David has opportunity to wrestle with God. And many of the Psalms we have in the Bible are from this time of wrestling. David wrestles with God, and God makes him king of a nation. Elijah, the prophet, he goes to the wicked king Ahab, who tries to kill him, and he finds a woman in Zarephath who is starving and making her last meal. Elijah invites her to give him the last meal. Seems kind of mean, huh? But he's inviting her to become an Israelite, one who wrestles with God. And God supplies the meals for 3.5 years. Esther finds herself the wife of the most powerful king in the world. And God saves a people through her as she enters a time of struggle, a time of wrestling. And throughout the ages, God has used the struggle people face to heal them and to do great things through them. It's so central to the way God works. He named his people those who wrestle with God. And the New Testament tells us that as we are adopted into Christ, we are spiritual Israel. We are those who wrestle with God. And so sometimes we can ask ourselves, I've been there, why God, you know? Let's skip this chapter. Let's go to the next one that might be a little bit better. And sometimes when we're struggling, it seems like God is so far away. Imagine being Jacob there. You would think God is so far away. You've done everything you can. Yet, God is a little closer than you think. You know, I don't know what God's doing in your life today. Maybe you're in the middle of the struggle, and it doesn't seem like God is very close, but perhaps he is closer than you think. And perhaps he is in the process of healing you to do something great through you. Maybe you fought against what God is doing in your life. I know I have at times. Maybe it's time to tell God, okay, I'm in. I'm willing to let you work your work in me. I'm willing to wrestle with you.